Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And we would love to welcome the wonderful evening of podcasts from LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block. I am your host, Christina, and we are on the phone, of course, tonight with lovely, charming, highly industrious, Bobby G. Bell.
I think you could be describing our author guest even more so than
yes,
me.
Hi
there, Jim.
We had snow yesterday.
You had snow and in Idaho.
All day. And as a matter of fact, our of course, Jerry's best friend, Dale Jackson, was here.
Uh-huh.
They just moved up here. We had lunch with he and his wife, Mary. And it was a very pleasant afternoon, and they're just so much fun. And Dale and I are going to be working on a project together. So, and also, in case you don't know or haven't been told yet, Dale will not be attending the Cowboy Festival this year.
I figured that. He will be missed for sure.
Yes, I'm sure he will be.
Yes.
Now, I have something very exciting to tell you. Because the bookie got an email from a young lady named Yasmin Howell.
Uh-huh.
She lives in Arizona, and she has written her very first book.
Yes.
Yasmin Howell is 17 years old and is still in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And we got a hold of the manuscript, and we looked at it. And, of course, Tuscany Bay took her under our wing.
Very exciting.
All the work that needed to be done on her manuscript we did for free. And reformatted and did everything for her book. She'll be redoing it, and it'll be coming out probably next week.
That's exciting. Newport High, right?
Port High is correct.
Yeah, that's exciting.
We're just excited to be able to do it for her. She is booked onto the show. She'll be joining us in July. And it'll be a fun night. And she's just a very nice, lovely young woman. We talked for quite a long time last night. And I made sure that I told her I'm not editing anything. I may correct a little spelling here and there, but I'm not editing anything.
Right.
And, you know, we're just going to format. And so we gave her back a PDF that looked like a real live book.
Oh, she's got to be so excited.
She goes, I love this.
Yeah, that's so exciting.
That's her very first book, and now she's written two more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's been writing for about 6 years, I think. And
yeah. I mean, she's only 17. No, it's 8 years. So
eight years.
So anyway, that being said, we have a very great guest on tonight. I just hope we can keep from cracking up all night. This gal is just like a real treat. Ronan, why don't you tell us who's with us tonight?
Ronan? Is Ronan there?
So right here on LA Talk Radio in the Writer's Block, there are many, many ways that we can embarrass our guests, and tonight is no exception. But tonight, from Mid-America, actually, Ocean Springs, Mississippi, comes a wonderful writer, Johnny Bernhard, her second trip onto the Writer's Block, and we promise to make it her best ever. We're going to be discussing her new book, Sisters of the Undertow, and whatever else Johnny just deems necessary to get out during the 50 minutes she's on with us. So stick with us, LA Talk Radio, The Writer's Block, and we're coming at you right now. Bobby, you're there?
I am. But I lost you guys for a bit.
I think, I did too. I mean, we lost the, oh, well. Anyway, welcome, please welcome to The Writer's Block, amongst all our faux pas, Miss Johnny Bernhard.
Yay.
Hello, Johnny.
Hello. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening. Good evening.
Here with you again tonight.
It's just wonderful to have you. Hey, look, I want to read a couple of your accolades here, if you don't mind. Because, I mean, you've got, like, more than a paragraph, but I'm only going to read a couple. Let's see. Your first novel, Good Girl, was shortlisted for the Winsome Faulkner Award, the Kindle Award for Literary Fiction, and the MS Arts and Letters Fiction of the Year. Her second novel, How We Came to Be, received the Summerlee Book Prize, HM, and was named a read by the International Pulpwood Queen Book Club. You know, all these awards, they're like tongue teasers. Her third novel, Sisters of the Undertow, debuts on Valentine's Day 2020, which is a week from tomorrow. So once again, Johnny, thank you so much for joining us. And, you know, we know you could be doing a lot more with your time other than being here, but we appreciate your time being with us.
Well, I love being with both of y'all. It's always a treat. I love talking about books and writing and the publishing industry, which is always changing, is it not?
Ever changing. So we read your book, The Sisters of the Undertow. Interesting title. I can see where it came from. Not really Undertow, but I mean, I can see where it came from. And once I was telling Bobby before we went on the air is that I have a grandson that is, what did I say, Bobby?
autistic. Yeah.
So, I mean, I understand the sibling things and the parent things and how a child that is not up in the, normal range? I guess you can't say normal range, can just totally disrupt the family. And I get that. And that was like a story that probably at this point needed to be told.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, I think it's interesting that anything, so this learning disabled child, this child born at 29 weeks during the 70s, would be as difficult within a family, causing a crisis within the family, as it would be with any serious health issue. It could be cancer, anything that would cause financial stress and emotional stress. What prompted me to write this story, I was watching CBS Morning News, 6 a.m., and usually in the early edition, they do a lot of feature stories. And it was a feature of a very beautiful young woman married to an NFL player who could not carry a child. She had miscarriage after miscarriage. And I was very moved by her story because I thought, well, to look at her, she's Olympian perfect, physically, very articulate. She's married to an Olympian. And then she cannot carry a child. So it's as if her body is betraying her. And what would that do to this young woman's confidence? Mm-hmm. As a wife or as a woman. So I was very intrigued by that. And I'm very fortunate in my personal life to know a lot of women that felt comfortable talking to me about multiple miscarriages and how it affected them. And I have several close friends that have special needs children and what it did to a marriage and what it did to the family unit. And how the family unit has to adapt to this tremendous change and what it does for the child. So I was very curious about that. And as a writer, I have to begin with an idea and from there, an idea that inspires me. You have to have something that drives that passion that will make you sit alone for hours bent over a keyboard writing. Mm-hmm. It has to be a passion, a complete belief in what you're pursuing. And then I developed the characters. So you've read the book. So I developed the mother in this story who is very much in love with her husband. And it is the 70s. And it takes a toll on her. And then the other inspiration of the book, when my first novel came out, A Good Girl, I was very fortunate to be championed by librarians and had several author events in libraries. Because if you could get that team behind you, you've got support for everything you've write, you're going to write in your career.
Sure.
They're very loyal readers, and they're very connected to the readership in their community. And so I was asked to do an author event in an urban area on a Saturday morning. It's raining. It was very cold. The librarian was doing what she was supposed to do, making the coffee, the lemonade, the cookies. I set up my books. I'm waiting for patrons to come in and buy these books. And what I saw in the 30 minutes before I began reading was that most of the patrons were homeless. And I watched a woman come in. I could only assume that she was a prostitute by the way she was dressed. And that's an assumption, a large one on my part.
Sure.
And she dropped off her two children and left. And I thought, well, what am I really learning here as a writer? It's not I'm going to sell a book. It's something much bigger than that. Mm-hmm. And then I realized the role of the librarian in America has changed.
Oh, yes.
Now they're babysitters.
They need daycare for the lonely. Yeah,
exactly.
And the homeless.
Yeah, healthcare.
But I don't think the system has acknowledged that and changed anything for them. I think they have a tremendous responsibility. And I was very moved by that, began doing some research. And of course, this is this situation is much greater in places like Seattle and LA, Houston,
right,
are large metropolitan areas. And I just had to develop a character that was a librarian, and there again is that passion to do a job that is that difficult without a lot of pay, the passion and the love of books.
Right.
And so now I have another character, and that's Kim in our novel.
Yeah. And the two sisters, Kathy and Kim, they're so diametrically opposed, yet you can tell there's an affection between them, but it's like sibling rivalry. It's like fist fights every 20 minutes, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, as an author, I think it's our responsibility to create for our readers these universal concepts. Sibling rivalry wasn't invented yesterday.
No.
It's been around for centuries.
Absolutely.
And so it's an easy gateway to connect the reader emotionally. It will make the reader think about, I remember doing this to my brother or my little sister.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you want to have that intimacy, that emotional engagement with the reader, or you've lost the reader after the first couple of pages.
Right.
You know, what makes us turn each page? We're engaged.
Well, yeah, absolutely. But you absolutely, and Bobby made this comment earlier while we were off the air, was that you absolutely captured the 70s.
Oh, yeah, 70s and 80s.
70s and 80s. And yeah. I can see them walking around with their headbands and their beads and their bell-bottom
pants. The polka dots.
The polka dots and the plants.
Her mom and the polka dots and Chanel number 5 and loves Baby Soft. And you give us a number of references without overdoing it or having us feel like, oh, this is just a litany of sound bites, visual bites from our past. But you give us enough of them to help also remind us of where they are. And you bring us, you know, we go right up to Hurricane Harvey. So, I mean, it comes into the current, pretty much, you know, the current time period. But I really enjoyed this book, Johnny. I I was engaged from the very beginning, and I have a dear sister. We don't have the relation. We had the little rivalry when we were younger because she was 9 years older than me and brilliant. And but she's been a tremendous influence on me. And she's just retired from a career in the library system as a children development head of children's library department. And so I've also been a witness to the impact of libraries and hearing from her as a professional and my brother-in-law as well over all the years, how libraries have changed and the use of libraries. And libraries are more important today than ever. And people look at me sort of surprised when I say that, because I think they think, oh, we just buy our books, you know, online and we get our Kindle or, you know, we're reading electronically or whatever. Who needs a library? Libraries serve so many purposes, including technology.
Right.
And I found and they she has been engaged in situations with homeless and other types of social situations. And so I found your handling of that very interesting, because Kim has developed a real love for and appreciation for the couple of characters that you create that she relates with. And then she finds herself, this isn't even published yet, so we don't want to do a lot of
spoilers. No, we don't want to give any spoiler alerts.
But, you know, Kim goes through something near the end of the book that she even has more relatability to those folks than she maybe had when she was serving them in the library.
Right.
It's just very interesting how you brought things full circle. And just like the book last week, Jim, I had to go back and start rereading it because I was wanting to go back to where you begin to set the scene and you begin to set up the characters.
Right.
And so I've actually kind of begun rereading it.
Well, I didn't get a chance to start rereading it, Bobby. I was busy eating, drinking beer and eating garlic cheese fries. So
that's okay. You touch on so many things, the sibling rivalry, on bullying, on immigration, on faith. You just in this is not a real lengthy book. Jim and I have read books twice this size, but you just pack it and
you get a lot out of it in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
I hate to break this up, ladies, but we're going to have to do a real quick commercial. So, and LA Talk Radio, you know, they're one of our favorite sponsors, and actually they're just really great people from Sam down to Ronan, our engineer. You can go ahead and wave, Ronan. And they do so much for the community. Plus they have such great programs on during the day. So if you have a mind, log on to latalkradio.com and see what they got going on. And why don't we hear a little bit about it, Ronan?
Hey, it's Jim Christina here for LA Talk Radio. And if you're like me and you love talk radio, but you just can't find anything worth listening to in that pesky little AM dial, then how about this? How about you tune into LA Talk Radio? You see, LA Talk Radio is the biggest and the best in LA and is a .com, so we have it all, from sports to music to self-help to, well, just about anything, including talk. And right now, it's coming right at you. Why don't you sit back and enjoy at www.latalkradio.com.
And we are back with our guest, Johnny Bernhard, and, of course, Bobby Jean Bell in the studio. And if you want to call and talk to our guest tonight, the number here in the studio is 818. Let's see if I can get it this week. 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. And a little reference to library workers and people who spend time and their careers in libraries. And I did a book signing in one of the LA city libraries down in the valley a couple of years back. And it was a Saturday, and on the weekends, or actually, because they're not open Sunday, but Friday and Saturday mornings, the library provides hot coffee and donuts for the homeless.
Wonderful.
And they come in, and they eat the donuts, and they're so appreciative. And they open up their restrooms for them to let them get cleaned up. And, I mean, it's like a caring society there in the library. And they don't have to do that. They just do it.
No, and they just do it.
Well, so, it's probably the library itself and our democracy is probably the truest form of it. Wouldn't you agree? And that everyone's welcome.
Absolutely.
Inside that space. Everyone has the opportunity to read a book, read a magazine, have access to Wi-Fi and the internet, where they may not be able to afford that where they live. So it's a very important institution. Before the break, we were talking about the many different themes within the book that the book isn't very long. I began my career in journalism, and that's how I was taught to write, not to overwrite, to look carefully at each word, to look at each verb, each adjective, that you could pack as much information into one sentence without overriding. I got a degree in journalism. I wanted to be a writer, but I knew that I probably needed something to have a paycheck every month, so I went into journalism. And loved that and started a family. The journalism career was very hard with young children. So I went back to school and got a degree in English and taught many years in high school. And again, that was my love of writing and literature. And I loved that career. And, you know, I still see some of my students from 30 years ago. It's a very rewarding career. So that's how I've morphed into what I'm doing now at 50. I asked my husband, I feel like if I don't write this book now, it's just never going to happen. And I had the support of my family and I was able to write and I'm putting out about a book a year. I'm exhausted, but I'm grateful that I can pursue that goal. Many people never get that chance. But it's interesting when we think about Kim as a character. Kim is very much an elitist, and we could look at elitist as perhaps being insecure. Kim had to find some coping mechanisms to deal with the changes in her family. So she escaped in books. She was academically gifted. So she ran with the academically gifted children for most of her growing up years throughout high school. So Kim lived in a bubble, which is a very dangerous thing to do, because you can begin to assume you know what it's like for other people when you're not really interacting with other people except people like yourself. And that's why it was important in her growth as a human being to put her in a library in an urban area where most of the patrons were homeless. That's where Kim begins to mature and develop empathy. It's a twist of fate, is one way of looking at it. But I think what the book is really asking the reader decide, is it fate or is it choices made? If we look at the special needs sister, she had a very happy life despite fate.
So, she did. And she had a nursing career. You know, she has a nursing career for a long time. She's happy. Very little impacts her in a negative way. She's kind of oblivious to it. There's a real charm about her. it's like she doesn't even totally realize what Kim has been going through. She's hurt when Kim doesn't appear to really, you know, love her. But as soon as Kim takes a moment to actually be kind to her, it's like the light, you know, comes on, and she's so grateful for that. But she's a really interesting, you know, she has a job. She's, you know, she's a fully functioning character. It's almost like when she was in school, they didn't really recognize what she was going to be capable of.
Mm-hmm. I don't think there was a whole lot of that going on in the 70s.
Yeah,
I think
so.
That was before inclusion and all the things. And of course, Kathy Renee is able to develop far beyond the public school's expectation of her because of her mother.
Yeah.
Because of her mother works so much with her.
Yeah.
And yes, she is an interesting character.
She is.
When I was writing these characters, and I've always been interested as an author in looking at polar opposites and what creates that, and how do they feed the yin yang? How do they feed off of each other? Mm-hmm. And where do they connect? Yes, Kathy Renee is very interesting in that she's definitely someone that is all about choices made and attitude,
mm-hmm.
and in dealing with life, where her sister is many times the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
I could. It's very easy to. Yeah, you can see that.
Well, so. And you write. The scenes when they're together are almost heartbreaking, because I think, at least for myself as a reader, I began to really like both of them and see I didn't favor one over another. I felt you really gave us full-blown characters. And one of the most painful scenes for me was when Kim picks up Kathy at the airport. They're going to have a little vacation time together. They're going to have a few days. And, you know, she's late and her sister's just patiently waiting in front, you know, at the airport. And they get back to the apartment and Kim goes in, closes the door to her bedroom and sits down and reads a book and leaves her sister out there. And that, like, my heart was just breaking. Like, how can you do that? Mm-hmm. You know? And yet I could also understand why she did it, but I was kind of unhappy
with
her.
Difficult.
Like, come on, you know, grow up a little bit.
Yeah. Well, Kim's the sort of character you want to believe in her because she's been hurt terribly, especially in the matters of love and trust. And you could understand why she has sealed herself off from feeling any real emotion. It's how she protects herself. But further in that scene, that particular scene in the apartment, there's a very touching scene before they go to bed. But Kim is only able to be very loving and show emotion to her sister when, you know, it's very quiet and her sister can't really see her face.
Yeah.
It's at night and she tells her good night. You know, no need to turn on the light. I just wanted to give you this gift.
Yeah.
She's a tender person as well, you know. So there's a little hope for all of us in those two characters. I think we all have a little bit of them in us.
Yeah, except for me, and it's been beyond hope for so many years now. I just, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, you would be like the Lionel character, Jim.
Oh, that's true.
You're Lionel in our lives. Yes.
Thank you. All right, they're going to take another little break here. And Bobby Jean, why don't you, let's hear a little bit about Out West. What do you say, Ronan?
Once upon a time, there was a man and wife. This man and his wife loved serving others through the retail trade. One day, the man heard a voice. whisper, "Go west." His wife did not hear the voice. The next day, the voice commanded, "Go west." And they did. And they found themselves in a new land, and it was good. And the voice said, "Open a business." And they did. And they called the business Out West, as that was where they were. And the voice said, "Invite authors and artists and musicians to Out West." And they did. And today that business continues to provide platforms for those with the creative spirit and great merchandise. And the voice exclaimed, "Use coupon code RADIO when you shop at outwestshop.com. And the man and his wife, their friends and customers live happily ever after. Because it's always a great day out west.
And it is always a great day out west. And we're back, and it's now 7:30, and we are talking with author Johnny Bernhard. And if you want to call and talk to Johnny tonight, the number here in the studio is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. Last week, I forgot it. So anyway. Here we are. So if Claire Fullerton, if you're listening, get on the phone.
I know. We're expecting Claire to call in.
Because we have you booked on the show. So
I know she's coming up.
Yep. She's coming up. Yeah. So talk about a little bit about your process, Johnny. We talked about it a little bit on Tuesday night, but when you structure a scene or a chapter, do you outline or do you pants it?
Well, the first thing I do once I have the idea for the novel, I develop the characters. That's the first thing. And that's a full character development, from what year they were born, what's going on in that year, when are they going to graduate from high school, all the exterior things that would influence that personality, their parents, where they were born, what they're going to do for a living, how that person looks. I do that for each character and make sure when I have those main characters develop that they're interwoven. Okay. Mm-hmm. They are a family unit. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I'll do like a very simple plot outline, very, very simple, just an easy arc of what the rising action should be, the climax, and how I'm going to resolve all the things that were presented in the rising action. But it's a sketch because, you know, the characters can bring the novel in a very different way. So I try to be open to that. And what I mean by that as the novel develops, the first draft for me is very skeletal. Mm-hmm. It's just... There's no descriptive scenes. I'm just trying to get a basic outline and rounding out the characters. It's when I go back in for that second draft, I'm filling everything in, you mm-hmm. know, like the etch-a-sketch and, you know, that they went to the high school prom and this happened. So it's not unusual for me to do 8 or 9 drafts, mm-hmm. not unusual at all, because, you know, I'll be out at the grocery store, I'll be somewhere, and now I use notes on my iPhone, and I'll type in an idea I get, or I'll be thinking about Kim somewhere, and I think, I left her hanging with that situation. I need to introduce a new character to solve that. Mm-hmm. So it's ongoing. That's why I don't say it's a concrete plot
I
spend so much time outlining, because it could change.
Right. Now, I ask a lot of authors the same question. I'll ask you as well. And I don't recall if I mm-hmm. asked it to you before, but I will now. Do you find that your characters oftentimes change your storyline because they've taken control of your story?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. That's why there's all the drafts. When a writer tells me they've written a novel in 2 drafts, that's hard for me to believe, because I don't think they're allowing, and to people that are not writers, they think this is crazy when they hear it, but you're not allowing your characters to speak and to fully develop.
And to grow, yeah.
I believe much of writing if you get into that sweet spot, is where it's almost subconscious,
mm-hmm.
where that character becomes fully developed and takes control of that story, and you're just the plotter.
Exactly. You're the diaper.
Mm-hmm. It is, to me, that's when writing is perfect. I'd love to tell you, Jim, that happens every time, but it is a sweet spot. And I am thrilled on those writing days.
I am going to agree with you. I will agree with you wholeheartedly on that one, Johnny. Now I'm going to ask you a harder question.
Okay.
One that you may not be able to answer. Have you ever written yourself into a corner and figured, oh, hell, now how do I get out of this?
I'm going to define that corner as being burnt out.
Okay.
Or nothing fresh is coming. And that's telling me I'm spending too much time alone in a room and I'm disconnected from people. And okay. I hear the same thing from songwriters. So what I will do is maybe do some people watching or a lot more walking where I'm an observer and I'm listening and I'm watching people. And I'll take a couple of days off from writing and it'll come back. But you know, much like the character Kim in being an elitist, for a writer, you got to get out of the bubble. Or you become your greatest fan.
Right.
You're thinking everything you're writing is great when it's stale. You have to have that ego in check enough.
Right.
When you're saying, this is terrible.
Right.
I mean, I'm beating my head against the keyboard just to get a word count.
You can also find yourself your worst enemy. It's just, you know, it depends on where you are sitting and how you're sitting in your chair and how often you get up from your chair. So
that's very true.
Yeah.
And I've heard it might have been an interview I read about a songwriter, and he said that's when, you know, I'll go sit in a restaurant and drink coffee, you know, and just listen and watch people interact. And that's, you know, that's a springboard for creativity,
mm-hmm.
watching, listening to others. You know, we can't always be the speaker. You know, we learn a lot more by just watching
right.
and listening.
Right, right.
So yeah. That's how it works for me.
You know, when I was, well, much younger, it could be much younger, or much older, much younger, I suppose. When I was a singer-songwriter at one point in my life, and when I got lost in a piece of music, I just just wasn't coming for me. My favorite place to go was this one tavern in Tacoma, Washington called the Engine House Number 9. And I would take my guitar with me on a Sunday afternoon and I would sit at the bar and kind of like balance my guitar, have a beer. And with people watching, you kind of like almost have to perform. So it would come to me, you know, the lyric would mm-hmm. come to me or the music would come to me. And it was mm-hmm. like, okay, now I'm fired again. I'm ready to go. I think you get within yourself so deeply you can't find your way out sometimes.
That's very well said. Very true in the arts.
So
because what we're trying to do is respond to human emotion.
Right.
To evoke an emotion once the work is created. So you can't do that in a vacuum. You cannot.
No, you can't.
It reeks of insincerity, doesn't it?
It does. It does. So, your idea is, and we've talked and asked you this question before about writer's block. Have you had it? And I don't remember your answer. So refresh my memory, if you would, please.
Okay.
Writer's block. Have you ever had it?
Just what we were talking about.
Right.
Absolutely. I think it's fatigue. I think it's spending too much time alone, not getting out and exploring something new. Because every idea I am given is from watching and listening to someone else. and trying to figure out why that person feels that way. Writer's block is just fatigue and pushing yourself when there's no creativity or inspiration there.
You have to stop.
You just have to stop.
And, you know, you're absolutely right when you said if you're not around people, how can you write about people when you're not around them? You don't have the interaction.
That's right. And I think variety of situations and different cities, you know, we mentioned earlier in discussing Sisters of the Undertow that I touched upon the immigrant story. Mm-hmm. Well, I was in Copenhagen 5 years ago and overheard this conversation in a bar, was amazed by it. Absolutely amazed that someone would say that out loud. And I held on to that conversation until I could find the characters and the plot to put the conversation in.
Well, there you go.
So, yeah, I believe that that's how it works for me. Mm-hmm. It's bits and pieces of where I've been, people I have met, and being moved by their stories.
Okay. I'll buy that. You buy that, Bobby?
I do. And I think the your choice of settings is also, I feel that these must be places that you really know intimately, or you've been there, whether it was Indian Lodge or when Kim does go to see the littlest mermaid and she's there. And I know it's easy to do, you know, research on the internet or use Google Maps or whatever to be able to go and, you know, really see a place. But my sense was you really were immersed in the locations that you write about.
Bobby, do you think it makes, as a reader, can you tell the difference?
I can.
Between a not, absolutely.
Yeah, I usually can.
Otherwise. It's like someone writing about the French Quarter in New Orleans who has never been. They're going to write about oak trees dripping in Spanish moss and people drinking mint juleps. That's a stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
The French Quarter is nothing like that. It's not. So I think authenticity of place and of culture and a voice is very important in fiction.
Right. I totally agree. And we have one more ad we have to run. And this is for Creative Edge. And if you're a writer and you're looking for a publicist, you can't go wrong with Creative Edge. And Ronan, why don't you give us a little something?
Okay, you've written a book. Now what are you going to do? Well, why don't you give Creative Edge Publicity a try? You see, when Creative Edge Publicity was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't the same as other publicity firms. Like an old pair of shoes or an old friend, they work closely with their individual clients' needs and goals and push harder to get them noticed. Creative Edge believes that communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is how they have built their success. They collaborate and they work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals. So Creative Edge, it's your brand, your future. Mickey Mickelson Publicists, and you could find them at www.creative-edge.services.
They're great folks. Mickey is a great, great publicist. And if you need a publicist, if you're listening and you don't know how to find one, www.creative-edge.services, and I'm sure Mickey will hook you up. Okay, we are coming close to the end here. We're not going to bother you much longer, Johnny.
Well, if I may, I'll
you may.
A bit of PR. Sisters of the Undertow releases February 14th. It is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, any independent bookstore. Your favorite bookstore in your neighborhood, please support them so they can stay open. And
right.
I just found out today that the book is available in Target. So appreciate
it. Wow.
I'm very fortunate to have the publisher with the distribution I have. It's available in the UK, Germany, and France.
Excellent.
Because of that great distribution.
Excellent.
And I invite writers and readers, writers that haven't published their first work. I give lots of tips for free on my website. There's a little blog on there. So that's Johnny Bernhard, B-E-R-N-H-A-R-D, author.com. Follow me on social media. I love to share what I've learned in my journey because I know how difficult it is to get that first book published and create a readership. And I promise you it gets easier with every book.
Okay, we'll go with that. And Johnny, I you made a comment the other night, and I'm going to do you a favor. You need not buy any of my books. I will send you two or three of them.
Well, I haven't forgotten the title, and I wrote it down. I love to support other authors because there were many authors that supported me. I'm going to do a shout out for Kathleen Rogers. On her fourth novel, The Flying Cutterbucks. And we were talking earlier about a true sense of place. You know, if you're writing about some place you've never been or a culture you don't understand, it's insincere.
Right.
And she set this book in a small town in New Mexico, and it's gorgeous. It's just lovely, the writing. I'm very impressed and excited for her with that book coming out. Unique sense of place, beautiful voice, an engaging story about a family. So we wish her a lot. But I'm happy to share what I've learned along the way. Just check out my website. Follow me on social media.
And we'd be happy to do that. Incidentally, you have a great website.
Yes, you do.
Thank you.
Lots of blogs. Love reading the blogs.
Well, besides that, you're a pretty nice chick, so what are you going to do?
Well, I'm grateful because I waited a long time for this. And, you know, age doesn't have anything to do with it. It's when the opportunity comes, go for it.
Right.
And do your best work.
I absolutely agree with you. And Johnny Bernhard, we thank you so much for spending your evening there in good old Mississippi. And now you can go have yourself a mint julep and sit in the...
Y'all have a good night. And
you do as well. And we'll be talking soon. And I will send you...
Okay.
Tell your husband I will send him some books. So I've got your address.
Congratulations on the upcoming publishing of this book. Very excited for you.
Very excited. And it's
Thank
a
you.
Wonderful
Thank
book.
Thank you for your course, kind support and what you do for other writers.
And of course the title is Sisters of the what is it?
The Undertow.
I hate that when that happens. Sisters of the Undertow, available on Amazon and all the online booksellers. So get a copy and read it. You will not be disappointed. Okay. Anyway, thank you so much, Johnny.
All right. Y'all have a good night.
You too as well. Thank you. And bye-bye. And next week on the Writer's Block, we have writer Matt Coyle from San Diego. And his next book with the Rick Cale Mysteries, of course, is Lost Tomorrows. And he'll be joining us next week on the Writer's Block. And I believe it's still a Bobby Jean night, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And thank you to the bookie because she just sent it to me. Thank you very much, Jerry.
Got it too. In fact, it's up in my Kindle right now. You know, my Kindle gets a lot of work. It's getting to where it's going on. It's the batteries are running low really fast now. So.
Are they? Yeah.
Anyway. Bobby Jean, I have nothing else to say, good or bad or indifferent. So you, the big Jimbo out there, have yourself a wonderful week. We'll be talking.
Thank you. Thank you.
And of course, next week again, we have Matt Coyle. And I'm looking forward to talking to Matt because I do like mysteries. And serial mysteries are just kind of like really good most of the time. So we'll see. And Bobby Jean, that's it for me. And thanks for being with us. And of course, for myself, for Bobby Jean Bell, for Russ Avison, and of course, Ronan Rossiter, our engineer stuck in the little office there in beautiful Sherman Oaks, California. We are out of here.